Hello, everybody. This is Parshas Kedoshim. And the Parsha begins with Hashem telling Moshe, Dabar al kol hadas b'nei Yisrael. Speak to the whole assembly of the Jewish people. V'amarta aleim, you say to them, Kedoshim to you, you should be holy. Ki kadosh ani Hashem kechem, because I am holy, Hashem your God. And all the Mepharshim, all the commentaries, explain different ways to explain this pasuk of what it means, this mitzvah of to be holy, to be Kedoshim. But the Darki Musar asked the question. He says, why is it that the Torah demands that this parsha, this specific parsha, be said El Kol Adas B'nei Yisrael, to the entire assembly? Rashi says, it teaches us that this is a parsha that was said by Hakel. Everyone had to be there, the men, the women, the children. Why is this parsha so important that everybody should hear it? Further, you look in the Zohar. The Zohar says, Kad havimatu chavraya kadishaya lahai parshasa, when the holy Chevra, the holy group of Talmidei Chachamim, would reach this parsha b'chedva, they'd have to be very, very happy, they'd be very excited, they'd be very overjoyed to learn this parsha. The question is, what is it about this parsha specifically that would make the Chevraya Kedisha, this holy assembly of Talmidei Chachamim, what would make them so happy specifically about this parsha? And the Darki Musar explains, he says a very fundamental point. He says, in most religions, there's the regular people, and then there's the holy people. The special people who live in a monastery or some kind of faraway mountaintop area where they're removed from life and they focus on holy things. And that's what makes them holy. And the rest of the people, their job is to deal with the mundane, and that's how it goes. The Torah here tells us, Kedoshim to you. You got to be holy. And then the Torah goes on to list a bunch of very, very mundane mitzvahs. Ish imay v'aviv tiro, honor your father and mother, don't serve idols, take care of your friends, don't steal, leave over corners of your field, etc., etc. Basic day-to-day living, halachas, and things which seemingly seem very mundane. And yet the Torah tells us, this is how it's going to make you holy. This is what's going to make them kedoshim to you. This is going to make you kaddish. And this, says the Darki Musar, is what the Chevraya Kedishaya, this group of Talmidei Chachamim in the Zohar, were so excited about, was that they saw in this week's parasha that Kedoshim to you is an obligation. It's something that's within the reach of every single Jew. It's not something that's said only to individuals. It's something that's said, El Kol Adas B'nei Yisrael, every single person in Klal Yisrael has the ability and the obligation to become Kaddish. But says the Baal HaTurim, it's Kedoshim to you, you shall be. Not Kedoshim Yiyu, you should be right now. It's a process. It goes bit by bit. It goes step by step. But if a person begins the process, if a person tries to become a little Kaddish, then Hashem helps him out. And slowly but surely, every person becomes more and more holy as he keeps every one of these mitzvahs. And that's why we say a bracha on every single mitzvah that we do. Asher kidishanu b'mitzvayso v'tzivanu, that you made us holy through your mitzvahs. Yaakov Kamenetsky one time got a letter from a bacher, and the bacher was telling him, bacher apparently was in touch with him, and the bacher was telling him how he's in Eretz Yisrael now, and he's learning, and he's steiging, and he's doing so great. And Yaakov wrote back to him how he's so happy to hear that he's steiging, and he's doing well, but he said, I want to tell you a very, very important thing. He said, a lot of times in life, you won't feel, you can't necessarily know or feel when you're steiging, when you're growing in your spirituality. There could be times when you feel like you're falling, you feel like you're in a bad rut. And there are times that you feel like you're soaring high, but it's not necessarily true that that's a good gauge of how you're doing spiritually. We're physical, and we can't feel how big our neshama is getting and how high we are doing in Kedusha. Kedusha is something we don't know until the end. But we have to understand that every single time you do a mitzvah, every bit of Torah that we learn, every bit of Tehillim that we say, Asher Kedishanu, we become holier, we become closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that's something which you can tell El Kol Adas B'nei Yisrael. Every single Jew has this in him, and every single Jew does this with every mitzvah that we do. The parasha continues, and Hashem commands Klal Yisrael, Ish Imai V'Aviv Tiro, a person should fear his father and his mother. And what's interesting is, you look in the Gemara in Erechin tells us, what does it mean to fear your father and your mother? Rashi brings it down, and the Gemara says, fear means don't sit in his place, and kind of don't refute his words. And the Gemara gives a bunch of practical examples of what it means to show fear from your father and mother. And the Ruchim and Dastar asked the obvious question. He says, why can't the Gemara just say simply, fear your father and mother means have the emotion of fear? Similar to Hashem, we say, Yiras Harayim, is a person supposed to have fear and awe of Hashem. Why does the Gemara have to go and give these specific examples and leave out the most basic version, which is fear your father and mother? Yerucham explains that the Gemara is telling us something very, very, very important. We have many mitzvahs of having emotions. Ahava, Yira, Emuna. These are all mitzvahs to have a certain feeling, a certain emotion. However, the Gemara says, Ezehu Yira. How does a person actually make that happen? Every single emotion, every single feeling a person has, he has to bring it out in some form, into action, into a maisa, because that makes it concrete, that makes it real, and that helps a person build that emotion and strengthen it. And that's what the Gemara says. What does it mean to have yira of a father and mother? It means not to sit in their place, not to refute their words, because without those actions, without those mitzvahs masiyas, without those mitzvahs that are in action, a person will never really tap in and concretize that emotion that he's supposed to have. And he says that's what the Gemara tells us a story in Masechta Shabbos, that there was once a convert, a ger. He was not a ger yet. He was a non-Jew who wanted to become a ger. And he came to Hillel. First he came to Shammai, and he told him, please teach me the Torah on one foot. Shammai chased him away with a stick. And he came to Hillel. Hillel tells him, I'll tell you, this is the one rule you got to know. Madalecha sani, what you hate, the chavruch lisavit, don't do to your friend. And the Marsha asked the obvious question. We have that pasuk in our parsha this week. It says, V'ahavta l'reacha kavaycha. Love your friend like you love yourself. Why did Hillel tell it to him in a different form? What you don't like, don't do to your friend. Leave it. What's wrong with the original script? Why do you got to change everything? The new 2022 version? Leave it the way it's supposed to be in the Torah. Says the Das Torah, that's exactly what Hillel was telling him. Of course the mitzvah is V'ahavta re'acha kamecha, but in practice, how does a person show and live and create that V'ahavta re'acha kamecha, that love? By doing and not doing Madalecha sani, what you hate, don't do to others. Because if you do that, and you refrain from doing things to people which they don't like being done to yourself, you'll begin to start having that feeling of love for other people. The parsha continues, and Hashem commands us, Al tifnu elha elilim, do not turn to the idols, ve'elehema secha le'sasu lechem, and don't make molten gods for you. And Rashi explains, why does the Torah change from calling idols idols to molten gods, te'elehema secha? And Rashi says, because in essence, obviously, they are just idols, they're just elilim, but people make them into gods, so therefore the Torah refers to them as elehema secha as well. And the question is obvious, why do we care that there are some people out there, some crazy people, who turn them into gods? Let's call them what they are. They're idols. They're elilim. They're just a bunch of sticks. Why do we treat them and give them that credibility and call them Elohei Masecha? What's the Torah trying to teach us? And the Das Torah explains, he says like this. He says, Torah is teaching us a very, very important concept, which is that people have an ability, and it's part of our nature, to take something which we know to be just elilim, just a piece of hunk of metal, and to turn it into a god. It's a concept of we can create our own idols. We can create our own gods. And it's something that happens throughout time and history. People take something which they know to be a simple thing, and you create a religion out of it. Just a simple modern day example is coffee. It used to be a drink that people paid $1, $1.50 for. And then it became an experience. It became a whole religion where people sign up for special boxes of signature coffees that come to them. And they have to rub it and brew it slowly and smell it and kiss it. And to the point where I had a friend who wanted to stay by somebody for Shabbos. And he was telling me how he came there and he wanted coffee. And the guy opened up some like jar of Maxwell House instant coffee. And now this friend is still going to therapy for PTSD. He can't get over how horrible that instant coffee he had to drink was. It became a religion. It became something which it isn't. People, by the very nature of our ability to take something and create something out of it, we eventually begin to buy into it. And it's a very, very slippery slope. And that's what Torah is telling us. Al tifnu elilim. Don't turn to the idols. Don't make for yourself a god out of something which you know to be an idol. The parasha continues and tells us the mitzvah loy tignoivu, don't steal, and a person shouldn't basically refute and say that and lie. And the yeshiva of Nevardik, and the Musa yeshiva of Nevardik, they used to say over a story, it sounds like it was a real life story, I don't think it was just a mashal, of a poor farmer who was waiting outside the post office for the mailman to come. It was right before Pesach, and he was very hopeful that one of his friends or family had sent him some money for Yom Tov. He was in a very, very tough spot. He needed money badly. and you're sitting there waiting for the mail coach to arrive, and he's waiting and he's waiting and he's getting hungrier and hungrier. And finally, sure enough, the mail coach gets there and he can't hold himself in. He watches the mailman go in into the post office, and he's just looking around and he just can't. And finally he sees a big fat envelope there, and he grabs it and he runs behind the post office, and he quickly opens it up, and sure enough, it's full of cash. As he's about to grab the cash, two policemen come over to him and they grab him. And as they're taking him away to jail for stealing mail, he looks at the front of the envelope, and he looks, and to his, so to speak, either joy or sadness, he realizes that the letter was sent to him. His relative had indeed sent him money. And he screams to the police and said, "Look, it was my letter. I was allowed to take it." And they said, "It doesn't make a difference. You stole from the mail coach." And they threw him to jail for the week. And the yeshiva, the O, would say that this is the same thing with anybody, any one of us who takes stuff that doesn't belong to us. HaKadosh Baruch Hu decides how much money a person is supposed to have for every year. And a person can get it one of two ways. He can get it legally, he can get it the right way, without any pain and suffering. Or he can try to steal it, and he'll get the same much at the end of the day. He won't get anything extra, but he'll have to deal with all the consequences of stealing something. And why go through it? Why do that for nothing? A positive version of a story about being careful with other people's money is one of the Rishonim, whose name is Rav David Avudraham. And, you know, a lot of people question, what is his name, Avudraham? So they say, the story goes, that Rav David owned a store that sold spices. And he had a custom that whenever people would buy spices from him, he'd always measure it out in dirhams, which is a measure apparently of that place. And he'd always take a heaping dirham. He'd always give a little extra just to make sure that he wasn't cheating his customers. And even if a guy would buy a very large order, he would still do it in dirhams and always give a little bit extra. That way to ensure he never cheated his customers. One time a non-Jewish customer came to his place. And the guy made a large order, and he sat there measuring out with his little dirhams. Sure enough, each one heaping. And finally, he packages up the package, and the guy leaves the store. After the guy leaves, David sits there, and he thinks to himself, did I mess up on the number of dirhams? Did I forget to put one extra dirham? And he sat there, and he wasn't sure, back and forth, you know, look, even if I did mess up on the number, but still, I give each one a little extra, so for sure I covered the difference. Back and forth, he decided, you know what? No, too bad. I got to go and give the guy the extra dirham. So he puts one in his cup, a little extra spices, closes his store, and he runs out after the non-Jewish customer, chases him, and he catches him finally, and the guy says, what do I do, what do you want from me? So he's like, no, I think I made a mistake. I think I forgot to give you one of your dirhams. Here it is, and here's your spices that I forgot to give you. And this customer was so impressed with the honesty of Rav David that he was Megayer. He ended up converting. He was so blown away with the honesty of Jews that he ended up converting. And therefore, they named Rav David Abu, as in the father of Durham. The father of Durham, as in he was the one who made somebody Jewish through his special, so to speak, you know, piousness when it comes to measuring out his dirhams. And you think about it, we're talking about somebody who was a Rishon, one of the greatest Torah scholars. He wrote all the commentary, all the tefillas. He's used in halacha all the time. But he's known for forever by this name, about specifically about how honest and how pious he was. Torah commands us, Hecheach techiach es amisecha. A person is obligated to rebuke their fellow Jew. The Gemara tells us, however, that there's a limit. Once the person you're trying to rebuke begins to either curse you or hit you, at that point you're no longer obligated to rebuke them. And Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, and Emes Yaakov, asks the obvious question. He says, where else do you find that there's a mitzvah in the Torah, an obligation in the Torah, which has a limit that once someone starts making fun of you or someone starts hitting you, you don't have to do it? A guy decides he has to sit in a sukkah on sukkahs. It's a mitzvah, I say. It's a positive commandment of Torah to sit in a sukkah on sukkahs. And another guy comes by and starts making fun of you. You frumach, you're sitting in the sukkah on sukkahs. That's it, you leave out of the sukkah? No. It's a mitzvah, say the raisa. You do it if your life's in danger, maybe. But just because a guy slapped you or cursed you, you leave a sukkah? So why, when it comes to the mitzvah of a cheach techiach, of rebuking somebody, is there this limit of that the person is absolved once the other guy starts cursing him out? So he explains as follows. He says, the Rambam writes, in the mitzvah of Techach, in this mitzvah of rebuke, the Rambam writes that a person has to do rebuke because, not because he's trying to kind of show that he's holier than thou to the other person, but he has to do it out of love and caring for the other person. He has to be that he's so bothered and so worried about that person's future in the world to come and how he's going to suffer, and he wants to save him, and therefore he goes and he shows him what's right and what's wrong. And says the Rambam, tzarech lehaidiyoi, you have to let the person know. This person who you're rebuking, you have to let him know that you're only doing it because you love him. You do it privately. You do it in a way he does try to minimize the amount that he gets embarrassed. And you have to make sure that he knows that you're only doing it for his sake. Says Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, if a person begins to hit at you or curse you for rebuking him, then that's the biggest sign that he's not getting that message, that you're doing it for his sake. At that point, you can't do the mitzvah of Echiach Techiach. At that point, it's no longer relevant because he's not getting it, that you're doing it for his sake. And that's why specifically with this mitzvah, the obligation is off once the guy starts cursing or hitting. But the depth that Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky is telling us is every time we rebuke somebody, it has to come from the fact that we love them, that we care about them, and we're trying to do what's best for them. And we have an obligation to make that clear to them when we rebuke them. I want to end off with one last var. We say, the parasha tells us, V'yahavta l'reacha kamecha. Every Jew is commanded to love his fellow Jew as he loves himself. And Torah adds on two words. V'yahavta l'reacha kamecha, ani Hashem. I am Hashem. I am your God. And the question all the mafarshim struggle with is, what does it mean, love your fellow Jew like you love yourself, because I am ani Hashem? What's the connection? So the Mashiach Chachma explains, says a very, very powerful thing. He says, the level of achdus, the level of unity that we see amongst the Jewish people, this level that a Jewish person, every single Jew can be commanded, and every single Jew fulfills on some level, this obligation to love another Jew, kamoicha, like himself. Something that amazing, something that powerful, the only way that can happen is because there's a creator in this world. There's Ani Hashem. Because Hashem made this world and he imbued every single Jew with this ability, this amazing midah, to be able to get, not just take care of himself, but to look out for other Jews and to be there even to the level of kamecha, even to the level of himself. I wanted to say a story I heard from Rabbi Wallerstein, Zecharei Levracha. He said the story over, he saw in the Sefer Aleinu L'Shabach. There was a young boy in Yerushalayim who, his grandfather was a war survivor. And he noticed that his grandfather, when he put on his tefillin, he noticed his grandfather didn't have any hair on his arms. Both of his forearms, they had no hair on them. So he asked his grandfather, Grandpa, why don't you have any hair? He said, I'll tell you when you're bar mitzvah. But your bar mitzvah, I'll tell you why. Fine, the boy kept pestering him, the grandfather kept, hold on, I'm not telling you until you're bar mitzvah. That's it. Back and forth. Finally, the boy forgot about it. Sure enough, it's his bar mitzvah. And they're celebrating, and it's in a beautiful hall in Yerushalayim. And all of a sudden, in the middle of the bar mitzvah, a man walks in. And this man, he has no hair on his body. No hair on his head, no hair on his eyebrows. And everyone assumes that this person is unfortunately going through chemotherapy, and that's probably why they have no hair. And this man walks into the hall, and he sees the boy's grandfather, and they hug, and they hold each other, and they embrace for minutes, and they're crying. And finally, this man with no hair, he sits down. The grandfather brings him to the head table, and he sits down next to the grandfather, and the bar mitzvah bacher, and the bar mitzvah bacher tells the bar mitzvah bacher, I want to tell you who this person is. I want to tell you a story. Remember you asked me many, many, many years ago about why I have no hair on my arms. So let me tell you the story. So the grandfather turns to the person who has no hair and says, you tell the story. So this person begins his story. And he says that he was in Poland, I believe, and the Nazis rounded up his whole family, his mother, his father, his brother, and sisters, and they take them to the camps. And for once they get out of the cattle cars, his parents get sent to the line to the gas chambers, and he gets sent to the line to the labor camps to work. And he goes, and he's waiting online. And the way it worked was that they make these people go into these pits full of lye, of acid basically, to burn off officially any lice that they might have. So they make everyone strip down, and they'd make them walk and then go jump into this pit. It burnt everything off, and they'd jump out, and then they would go out and get their prison uniforms. So this boy's going, and he's sitting there, and he's talking, thinking to himself that they just took everything from me. They took my family, took my parents, took my siblings, and now they take in my clothing. What's the point of living anymore? What's the point? And he goes, and eventually, he goes and he, when it's his turn to go into the pit of acid, he decides he's going to stay under. And he goes into the pit and he doesn't come up. And he's staying under and he's staying under. And finally, someone grabs him out. And this person who grabbed him out was this boy's grandfather. And this boy's grandfather pulls him out and says, what are you doing? You're going to die in there. And the boy tells him, I'm nothing left to live for. Why should I even bother coming out? They took everything from me. And why should I live there? Down there, I'm there with Hashem. I'm there with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's it. I'm happy. I don't need to come out for this. And his grandfather, his boy's grandfather, pulled him out, tells him, look, I promise you, we're going to get out of this. And you're going to come to my grandson's bar mitzvah. And I want you to promise me that you're going to come. And his boy looked at him and he was just, he couldn't believe what this guy was saying. He said, are you crazy? We're sitting here. Look at this. They're murdering everybody. We're not going to get out of this place. Until you promise me. So he promised him. And he said his grandfather, his boy grandfather, took him out and in the barracks and he tried to heal him. But obviously, after being under the acid for so long, this boy never was able to regrow back his any hair. And that's why for the rest of his life he had no hair. And the grandfather, this boy's grandfather, his hands had been so badly burnt from the acid, that's why he had no hair on his hands. But he told this boy, he said, I'm here now by your grandfather, by his grandson's bar mitzvah, just like he promised me. We're here together to celebrate your bar mitzvah. Now, besides the incredible betachan, the incredible clarity of betachan that boy's grandfather had at that point, but there's also a different idea. There's a idea here of Klal Yisrael has an ability to be there for each other, to pull each other out of the worst times, and that's something that only can happen because Ani Hashem, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us that me, that gives us that ability to be there for each other and to pull each other through the craziest of times. We should all be zeicha to have a wonderful Shabbos.